Hello and welcome to the Disney Magic Hour, episode number 11. This week we are going to have our first entry into a look back at all of the Disney animated films, starting off with the one that started it all, Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs. And I believe Melissa wants to say something about Sumsums. So we are actually in a different room, so the setup is not the same. So this week to my left is Melissa. Say hello, Melissa.
Hello, Melissa.
Next to her is Scott. Say hello, Scott.
Hello, Scott.
And across from me is Brian. Say hello, Brian.
Hello, Brian.
Hello, Pete. And say hello, Pogo. Wishery by Pogo. I think I've used that song before, but it was very Snow White based and I figured it fit, so there you go. You can find that video and others over on youtube.com/Pogo. You can find more of his music over at soundcloud.com/Pogo Mix, and his home net address is pogomix.net. We are lastgenpodcast.com. Find us on Twitter at lastgenpodcast, Facebook under the same name, and even more specifically, you can find our Disney group if you search for Disney Magic Hour. And if you head on over to iTunes, you can search for that or Last Gen. And please be so kind as to hit that subscribe button and give us a 5-star review. How's everybody?
Very good.
Excellent.
Good.
Well done.
All right. I'm doing good.
We are a day late today, but that's because Windows 10 decided to make things interesting for us. Basically, the equipment that we normally use just wouldn't work. We had a little bit of driver issues, so we had to cancel last night. But in canceling last night, we got Scott to be here because Scott wasn't here last night. So kind of worked out, and it's only going to be a day late, so huzzah. This is going to be the start of something that, if we do it correctly, we could do for a long time.
Yeah. Yes.
Because, well, nice little correction right off the bat, actually. 54 animated films produced by Walt Disney Company. And we would love to do all of those, and the Pixar films, and the real time, I was going to say. Why did I say that?
My live action.
The live action films that have a connection to something in the Disney parks. I'm thinking that we'll do it in year order.
Yeah, that's what I was...
You know?
That's a good idea.
I was first thinking, we can do all the animated films, but then, you know, we'd have to go back, and obviously, I want to do 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea.
Yeah, and you want to do Mary Poppins.
Swiss Family Robinson. Yeah. But where does Mary Poppins sit? I was going to involve it. I was going to include it in the animated features.
Yeah,
it's both.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of like how Three Caballeros is both. You know, it has like segments that are mainly animated, but then you have the crossover parts.
Well, that's why if we're doing it by year, then it's all right. Then we don't have to worry about
I think we'll just do it by year. That seems the easiest way to do it.
And then I know there are a couple animated ones that we had trouble finding where we can actually watch them.
Yeah, like because they're compilations. They're not really like Melody Time, stuff like that.
Yeah.
They're a little harder to find. Right? There's obviously one that's very hard to find. Selling of the South, but I say we just watch it off YouTube. I know it's on there.
Yeah, that's what I was
and I
do.
Would love to do a Song of the South episode just because.
Yeah, I haven't watched that.
I didn't have time to sit down and watch it at home, Snow White. So I watched it on YouTube on break at work.
Okay,
because it was still on YouTube. It's on YouTube, so that's how I watched it.
Yeah, we watched it last night or
Monday.
Yeah. Scott, you watched it last week.
Yeah, I had a confusion episode. So I watched it last week, but.
So first we want to do a little bit of news. Melissa, you want to talk about Sumsums, of which you are obsessed of.
Yes.
Of which we need to start building more shelves for because,
I want to pile them all together.
They're really tiny. I thought they were bigger.
Well, you can get the bigger ones, but I like the smaller ones. I think they're cuter and I also can fit more of them. Also, not all of them come out in the bigger sizes. So the little ones for me, I think they're like 3.5. And they're like $5, so that also helps.
That's why they sell out so quickly also, because they're so cheap.
Yeah. This month was Aladdin. Came out yesterday. Sold out yesterday.
Yeah.
First Tuesday of every month is the new Tsum Tsum, and I always want it, and they're always gone. Like, the Inside Out ones, gone.
You might have to take off and go into the store and get them.
At, like, 9 o'clock when it opens, yeah.
They sell out in 20 minutes.
I was able to get, and the only one that I tried to get that was sold out was Jafar, and I want to say that I went on the website at like 9:30, 10 o'clock.
Something like that.
So I wasn't up at like midnight or anything like that.
Oh,
and,
okay.
And we got Raja.
Genie.
Iago.
And Abu.
Yeah, so we got we got the four. She didn't want, that was the ones you asked for.
Yeah.
Actually, well, you asked for Jafar, but Jafar was sold out.
I think the animals are cuter. Like, some of the human figures, I don't think I have any human ones. I just don't know if I care for the way that they look. But, like, I got Olaf, I love Baymax, I got three of the Inside Out ones. I was able to grab Anger, Sadness, and Joy. They had them at the mall randomly, like, a couple weeks
anger,
ago.
Anger, Sadness, and
Disgust, I'm sorry.
Joy was sold out.
Yeah, Joy and Bing Bong, I want Bing Bong.
Yeah. Well, it's weird. I look for them on eBay, and there's, like, a U.S. release and a Japanese release.
Yeah.
I don't know if there's a difference.
There is. You can tell with the coloring.
Is it a quality difference?
I don't know if it's quality, but there's definitely coloring. Maybe, like, the fabric's a little different, because the way they look, it definitely looks like the fabric's a little different.
So if you were buying them, does it matter?
I like the way the American ones look, because I feel like the color's a little bit more deeper. The Japan ones tend to be a lot more pastel colors.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
But they started over in Japan, and obviously they took off because they're cute and adorable.
As long as they don't flood it the way they did with the vinyls. You know, you got to a point with the vinyls where it was like, who wants an urban set? Nobody.
No, yeah. As long as they keep it, like, Disney-related. Though I did think today, I was like, with all the stuff that they're doing, you know, they did Ariel, they did Lilo and Stitch last month, they did Aladdin. Next month they're doing Nightmare Before Christmas, which looks really cool. I would love if they did a Marvel set. Like, a little Hulk? That would be adorable!
I'm sure they're going to, because, again, if every week they release a film, they'll be good for a whole year. And then they can release Pixar films, which would make them another, you know, couple of months. Then you could do Marvel films. It's really endless.
I
now,
wonder,
do they release weekly or monthly?
Monthly.
Once a month.
Once a month.
Yeah. I'm sorry.
Month.
So, yeah,
yeah,
I take that back.
That's why
yeah.
I was, yeah.
They could release once a
they
week.
They could release once a week, okay.
And have enough for more than a calendar year. Yeah. You know, if this collectible can stand the test of time, you are looking at 4 to 5 years worth of weekly releases based on if you did every film. I don't know how many people will be clamoring for a Great Mouse Detective Tsum Tsum.
But we know one person who will. Yeah.
But when it gets to a collection thing, though, it's kind of...
Yeah, yeah.
They did start, though, also they released Emotion ones, where they took, like the Fab Five and the Winnie the Pooh stuff, and now you have some of them that are winking and some of them that are sleeping, and so it's just, like, more things that they'll do. I'm sure they'll do a Christmas one.
I think those are lame.
Yeah, I do. I'm sorry.
I thought they were so lame.
I know, but you get the people like me who are like, they're adorable, because the sleeping Dumbo is adorable.
It made me think of the emoticon movie that they're making. Oh. Not Disney, but they as in others.
Well, I'm sure they'll do Christmas stuff, because they already, did that on the Tsum Tsum game, so they might do that again.
You'll get,
but,
like, a Christmas Mickey and whatnot.
I love looking for them. I'm sad that they sell out so quickly. I wish they wouldn't, but...
Yeah, but I guess that keeps the excitement up every month.
Yeah.
And for 3 days, and then no one can buy them the rest, and then it's all eBay.
Like, they don't come out sporadically through the
they
month?
They must, because they did have the Inside Out ones, like, a couple weeks ago, and those came back in June when the movie came out. Oh, okay. So,
but that was it.
But it was,
only
like, a complete, like, shock. Yeah.
So you just wait 6 months for the...
Just wait 6 months. If you wait a month and a half, 2 months on eBay, as long as it wasn't a crazy limited run, you'll have to pay a premium of maybe, like, $2 or $3 more, but you will get them. Like, if you're that interested in them...
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll track down a Bing Bong eventually.
Yeah, like, you'll get a Bing Bong and a Joy eventually. Yeah, you won't pay $11 as you would have at the store, but if you pay $15, do you really care?
For the two of them, no.
Yeah, so that's the thing. Like, if it doesn't become, oh, that's the only way I'm going to be able to get them, which, if you don't try it on the day of, might wind up where you end up. Huh? Where'd that go? Yeah. but you can... If you make the effort, I guess you can get them.
Yeah, I'm sure.
I think the online store seems a better bet than the actual physical store, though, because...
Well, yeah, because they have better stock, at least.
Yeah.
Not only that, you don't have to worry about driving all the way to the mall and dealing with...
And if you're working on a Tuesday...
Everybody trying to get the same, you know...
Yeah.
Yeah, and we're not even sure. We tried to find out. Actually, Brian, did you find out? Were there limits?
Yeah, two.
You can buy only two per character?
Two per person. So if Mel went in, she can only buy two.
As in, like, Jafar and Aladdin, and that's it? She can't buy one of each?
No, two of each character,
I think. Two of each character.
Yeah,
okay,
my friend wasn't specific, but I'm assuming that's what it
is. Because that's what it is online.
Yeah.
But still, if you only get, like, 20 or 30 in, that's 15 people.
That's 15 people,
possibly,
yeah.
And that's it. That's not very...
And you got to think, like, bad. You know, like Jafar and that stuff is the ones that are...
Yeah, I'm surprised we got Genie. That was actually...
I was really surprised that Jafar was sold out, but Genie was available, especially with, you know, all the emotional tie with Robin Williams now.
Yeah.
I would have assumed that was the first to go, but maybe they had a bigger run of Genie.
Maybe.
Who knows?
Yeah, maybe they...
Who knows?
Unless people did like what I did and said, let me get Jafar and Iago, and then... Like, maybe they were then going to go for Genie and didn't.
I guess.
I don't know.
I don't think people get rung out separate times on the website. They just throw them all into
Well, no, if there was a limit on the website. So if
it's two
per character. Right.
Yeah,
okay.
Two per character. So you could buy all of them at once if they were available to you.
Yeah,
okay.
So, all right, you guys want to get into the film thing?
Yes.
Let's do it.
Okay, cool. I first want to make a little thank you and a shout out. When I was trying to figure out what we wanted to discuss outside of just did we like the movie, how was it made, yada yada, I actually went over to another podcast that I'm a very big fan of. It's called Mission Log. It's a Star Trek podcast where they review every episode of Star Trek, starting from the original series and working their way up all the way through every episode and the films. And they do it in chronological order as well, actually. Uh-huh. So, you know what, thinking about that, yeah, we'll do it in chronological. So I wanted to use their idea as kind of a starting point for what we wanted to do, but I didn't want to just rip it off. So I actually contacted the show and I spoke to one of the hosts, via email, John Champion, and he was actually really, really helpful in deciding what questions could we ask about each film at the conclusion of every episode. And he was very supportive and gave us a lot of help. So thank you very much to him. Who knows, maybe he'll come on one day. And if you get a chance, I would definitely go check out, especially if you're a Star Trek fan, it's a slam dunk, missionlogpodcast.com. And it's actually produced by Gene Roddenberry's son, whom right now I can't remember his... Rod Roddenberry, I believe. Rod Roddenberry. It's actually produced by him. So, you know, they have good ties to the original, and they have a lot of access to original scripts and stuff like that, so they can really break down all of the past episodes of Star Trek. So thank you very much to John Champion, Ken Ray, and that podcast over there. Go and check them out. So... this week, we're going to start with the 1937 classic. Sounds cliche to say it, but it is.
Yeah, but yeah, it is.
Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs. Some interesting little information that I found out about this as I was kind of looking into it. Number one, if you don't have the Disney Animation iPad app, I don't know if it's available on Android. It's simply called Disney Animation. I want to say it was about $7 or $8 when I bought it. It may have been on sale. It's the best Disney app. If you're a Disney fan and you want to look into the history of the company and their animated films in particular, it's an absolute must-buy. And through that, I found out that there are 119,520 frames of animation.
Wow.
So, that's a lot of work.
Yeah.
The runtime on this is at an hour and 23 minutes. Strangely enough, if you look up different things, different sites have different answers for this.
For runtime?
Yeah, I've seen an hour and 28, and I've seen an hour and 23, I've seen an hour and 24.
I wonder if it's because of what I picked up on at one point, at the end.
I don't think that's 4 minutes long.
It is. He stutters a really long
we'll
time.
We'll talk about that.
I know.
We'll talk about that when we get to that, though. I didn't look into that.
I did a couple Google searches.
I feel stupid that we're talking about it now.
Yeah, no, we'll talk about it.
We'll talk about it when it comes up. Yeah, because that's near the end of the film. There's something else at the end of the film that...
could add some time.
I don't think either of us noticed when we watched it.
I might have found out about it, though, through my Google searches, so...
Well, I'm just giving you a number. Yep. Okay. All right, that was a little You'll find out later.
Stay tuned.
So let's start with just kind of the background of Snow White and how it came to be. This was one of the very first films that seemed to affect Walt Disney. Through my research into looking into it, when he was 15 years old, he went and saw a silent version of the film, which basically stayed with him. But if you look into what he wanted the first animated feature to be, Snow White was not it.
Oh, really?
No, it wasn't. He wanted to do another version of Alice in Wonderland, the way that he started the Alice Adventures.
Okay.
He wanted to do a live-action animation mix starring Mary Pickford, who was a big star in the silent era. But that never really came to be. I would think they couldn't nail down a story, or it was just cost.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe funding.
Maybe, yeah. Just the cost of it would have been crazy. So he eventually wound up going on Snow White. Also, he wanted to do... what's a Harlan? Babes in Toyland.
Oh, okay.
But the rights were owned by another film production company, and that's how the whole Laurel and Hardy film came to be made. So he eventually decided to land upon Snow White and the Seven Dwarves. What was really interesting, though, also looking into this, was the animation that they used to prepare for Snow White. You can watch it. Because if you go and you can look this up, it's on YouTube, the 1934 Silly Symphony, Goddess of Spring. That animation is very akin, but a rougher, earlier version of what you eventually see in Snow White. Something I noticed right off the bat, the faces are very similar.
Mm-hmm.
The Goddess of Spring and Snow White's actual facial animation, very, very similar. But they seem to be working on the fluid movement of hands.
Mm.
If you really pay attention as you watch Snow White and the Seven Dwarves, Snow White's hands and the Evil Queen's hands,
yeah,
very articulated, yeah, very, very cool. But if you watch Goddess of Spring in the opening sequence, the Goddess of Spring is kind of motioning her arms like waves, mm-hmm, and they're very bendy looking. They're kind of creepy looking.
Yeah, that's scary.
They're a little creepy looking. They look a little too long,
mm-hmm,
and this and that. But you can see, like, okay, this
where
is
they're
where
they're going with it.
Yeah, this is where they are really, really starting with it. So I found that really interesting.
Yeah, even the birds in that one look very similar to the birds in Snow White. I noticed that.
Yeah, they have that same kind of fluffy, cuddly look.
Yeah.
Yep.
The way that you see all the, what we call forest creatures. Yep. I kept putting animals in my notes. I don't know why. Instead
well,
of, like,
they are
forest
animals.
Creatures. Yeah, I know. But, you know, you always hear it, like, referred to as forest creatures and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want to look into that, I would definitely look that up. There was one other film that Disney was attempting to make back in the day, and that was Rip Van Winkle.
Really?
Yeah. That's interesting.
That is.
To my knowledge, they never really revisited that.
Not that I can think of.
So I wonder if somewhere in that vault, if there's some Rip Van Winkle original work. I'm
that
sure
would
I could
be
have
really
looked
cool.
that up, actually. I probably should have looked that up.
Yeah.
Oh, well. Another big thing that fell into Disney wanting to do a feature film was realizing the limited amount of road that he would be able to really trek only doing shorts.
Yeah.
Ultimately, it would always be something that was tacked on to other features that people really came to see, and the cartoons would eventually become, you know, an afterthought.
Yeah.
So this is what spurred him into saying, you know what, we have to do this, because if we really want to grow the studio, the only way we're going to do that is with the return that we would get off of a successful financial film.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe he didn't plan for the cost, though, because the initial cost is really crazy. And when you remember, this is 1930, you know, in the mid-30s when they're planning this.
Yeah.
The estimated cost was $250,000, which, you know what? That's not a high number now. It's baby money.
No.
But back then, that's a pretty expensive film. It wound up costing $1.5
million. Yeah.
Which, even by today's standards, it's pretty decent for, like, an animated
film. Oh, no. Now, animated films, they cost $50, $60 million.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're crazy.
Well,
they're
is that because of the CGI? Now.
Even if it was hand-drawn, it would then take longer and you would have to pay out more man-hours.
True.
That was, actually, you saying that reminds me of a story that John Lasseter once told. when he was working on Brave Little Toaster and introducing CGI elements into that film, I'm not sure who he spoke to, but it was one of the higher ups in Disney. And Lasseter was basically showing him, hey, look what we can do. And the guy's response was, well, how much money does it save us? And Lasseter, you know, said back, well, none, but, you know, it's a newer way of doing things and we can blah, blah, blah. And the guy just turned and walked away from him. Mm-hmm. You know, and then that eventually led to Lasseter being let go of Disney.
Yeah.
And, you know, kind of coming back the triumphant hero. Very akin to what happened with his friend, Steve Jobs.
Yes, yeah.
You know, when Steve Jobs got ran out of Apple mm-hmm. to only be begged to come back to save the company from crashing on its own death.
And it was, what I had read too, was the original budget of $250,000 was 10 times the budget of the average Silly Symphony that they would do.
Well,
so
yeah.
That would, his estimated budget was 10 times.
That's not so, even, I mean, yeah, because I mean, I would say your average Silly Symphony was what, probably 6 to 9 minutes?
Yeah.
So yeah, if you're going to stretch that out to 10 times that amount, you're going to get smoked.
But I guess, you know, it was much, much more than he thought it was going to be.
So if, you know, if you've ever been in One Man's Dream in Hollywood Studios, you know much of this story. Walt actually even put the house, farm, and home up.
Yep.
To help finance this film, the studio, everything. So everything ran on whether or not Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs was going to be a success. Something else I found out really interesting, the voice of Snow White, and I always feel like I'm saying her last name wrong, Adriana Caselotti, never appeared in another film.
Really?
Had a deal with Disney that her voice, that Snow White voice, could not appear in another film.
Wow.
I don't know how that works. And then, again, I read this on a couple of sites, but I didn't get anything concrete.
Yeah.
I'll definitely look into it. Or if anyone knows, please, you know, hit us up at the show with any info on that. Because he didn't want that voice appearing somewhere else and kind of breaking that illusion.
Yeah.
And when you think of other princesses, I mean, do you know of anything else that, like, Irene Woods? Irene or Eileen? I always get that wrong.
Oh, I don't know.
You know of any other works that you've ever really heard the princesses' voices?
Not from
in the old days.
Yeah, not from the old days. I think that all changed, you know, with the more recent stuff. But yeah, from the old days, like, you look at the cast list, and it's not like nowadays where you could look at the cast list, see the voice, and then find like a ton of other things, you know. Now it's like,
because even, I mean, we're looking right now at a screen that basically has all of the info on the film, on some of the voices and whatnot. Everything is uncredited because they did not put these actors' names in the credits to further uphold the, I don't know, what would you call it? The mystery, the mystique, the fantasy behind the film.
Fantasy behind it, yeah.
So, very interesting way of going about all of that. I also found out the original names of the dwarves, which are many.
Yeah.
I'll just read them off to you. Burpee, Shorty, Tubby, Stuffy, Puffy, Lazy, Swift, Sniffy, Nifty, Gabby, Baldy, Wheezy, Hickey, Dizzy, Deffy, and Jumpy. Jumpy and Deffy eventually became Dopey. Basically, he
together.
Took that over.
Yeah.
Sneezy and Dopey were the last two that were put in there, you know, at that point. So I thought that was pretty interesting. And that only happened at the end of October 1934, where Doc, Grumpy, Bashful, Sleepy, and Happy were named.
Yeah.
So again, long process on this kind of stuff, and a lot of stuff that was, you know, cut out of the original film. There was a, you can now see this sequence, at least in storyboard form, if you have the Blu-ray. The soup eating and bed building sequence that was animated by Ward Kimball was totally cut out of the film. It was where they actually fashion a bed for Snow White. That was totally cut out, and he almost left the studio because of all the work that he put into that, and then it wasn't used. But he was kind of sweetened back, and he became the key animator and the man in charge of Jiminy Cricket for Pinocchio. So they were able to keep him in there. So, all right. A little bit of info back on the film. Some other little notes, but I'm going to actually talk about that as we talk about the film. I want to just start from the very beginning. We're going to do a quick little run-through of the film, some certain things, And then at the end, we'll discuss whether we like the film, mm-hmm. because mm-hmm. I know for a fact there are films in the Disney Vault that I do not like.
Oh, so yeah, same with me. Yes.
Spoiler, this isn't one of them. No, but but there are some that I'm not a fan of. Yeah. And then we're going to ask, does it hold up? What is the iconic image? And does this film work itself on a message? Or is it simply a vehicle to bring you an emotion? And there are two, those are two very distinct things.
Yeah.
So let's just start with the opening of the film, which you will now know this kind of opening because we'll see it again as we're going through more films. The storybook opening, mm-hmm. where the book is actually being opened on film with the jeweled bookcase.
I was actually going to go a little bit before that.
Oh, go right ahead.
When they do the whole opening credits and the score, I jotted down a note, like it's a very kind of Broadway type of opening where you get like a little bit of the hints of the music that are going to be used throughout the play or the movie in this case. And, you know, I always find it interesting with the older movies when they do the credits beforehand because, like, now it's so, you know, the credits are so either ingrained in something that's happening and you don't get a long credit sequence in the beginning, or they're just, you know, not there in the beginning very much.
In particular, a filmmaker that does it the old classic way is Quentin Tarantino.
Yes.
He always has his credits at the beginning, mm-hmm. and they've made it a thing with the Mission Impossible films, where the opening sequence credits in the last two films not only are incredibly flashy and very, very well done, but they show you the film. You're not aware of exactly what you're seeing, but they show you little shots of the film.
Yeah, it's kind of like how Bond does it a little bit, too.
Yeah, if you break down the... Well, on certain ones.
Well, on certain ones, yeah.
Certain ones, it's just naked girls floating around. But on Skyfall,
yeah.
in particular, there is a lot of the plot within there. You have no idea what you're looking at,
exactly.
though.
Yeah.
You know, you see the stag of Skyfall, which is, you know, his old home.
Yeah.
But you wouldn't know... Well, I guess maybe if you read the book, you would have a link into that. But, okay, yes.
But, yeah, I always thought the openings with the old films like that were very interesting because it's very dry, like, just words up on the screen, music playing, you know, and it's not something that immediately draws you in. I always thought that was, like, an interesting way of doing it.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Another thing that happens now after the storybook opening, we also have an adapted by Grimm's Fairy Tales. I want to keep an eye out mm-hmm. for how many other Disney films actually note that in the openings. I don't know if it happens very much.
Yeah, I can't.
I didn't remember it was in there
yeah,
either.
Neither,
so it could be in other ones, and I'm just not aware of it.
Yeah.
We open with a multiplane camera shot, which, if you're a Disney fan, you know, you pretty much know what that is. But the multiplane camera was developed by Disney in the fact that they would have numerous glass slides with different animation on it, and then shoot the camera through those, giving you a sense of depth while looking at 2D animation. That shot, though, of the single light in the castle is actually later lifted by Orson Welles and used in the opening of Citizen Kane. So the movie definitely had its influences.
Yeah.
Hmm. So if you ever sit down and watch Citizen Kane, after the little credits and you have the look through the fence, you're going to see the shot in live action that opens up Snow White. It's actually pretty interesting.
That's cool.
And in our first scene, we get our first view of the Evil Queen.
Yeah, actually, even before that, again, interesting enough, there was a, in the storybook, it was the words and you had to read it. And there was no narration over it. And I thought that was really interesting for a child's film because nowadays, like, you take little kids to see films all the time and they might not necessarily know how to read. And some of the words weren't, like, you know, baby down.
I'm going to say that I don't think it's a kid's film.
Yeah.
No, it's not a child's film. This movie was aimed to get adults and everyone into the theater. This wasn't a kiddie film in the way that, like, Minions is a kiddie film.
No, and that's, I think, what is always great about Disney is because they're not straight, you know, children's films. You know, even, you know, when we saw Inside Out and the director of Inside Out
Pete Doctor
said it's an it's not just a child film, it's an adult film.
Well, he actually says, we don't make kid films.
Yeah, but I just thought it was interesting because, you know, typical Disney films, you just think, you know, for kids, especially, you know, the classics like Snow White and Cinderella. And, like, I didn't remember that you had to do a lot of reading in the beginning. And I don't know, I thought that was really interesting.
See, I feel, looking back at Snow White, and then as we go through these, I don't think I really appreciated these older movies as a kid because
I thought they were boring.
They were boring. That's gonna say I thought they were boring.
Yeah.
But now I sit back and watch them. Wow, this is good. I really enjoy this. And as a kid, I don't remember feeling that way.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think that's why that you can do that with the storybook, because it's more for adults. The kids aren't going to care about that portion of it anyway. If you go with a little kid, they're not going to.
But it tells you the story. That's why I thought it was interesting. You know, it gives you the setup of, you know, the Queen, Snow White, and everything like that.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, you don't obviously miss it because the movie then, you know, tells you it as you go. But I just thought it was interesting.
Something I learned when I was in film school, mute a film. If you ever want to watch a movie on mute, can you still follow it? Then it's a really good movie.
Yeah.
Because it uses visual storytelling to inform you of everything. And this film does that immensely.
Yeah,
yes.
It does it immensely well. So we get introduced to the magic mirror, and we have our, you know, classic, you know, who is the fairest of them all. There is a certain eeriness.
That's what
this movie has a real horror element to it.
That's exactly what I that's exactly the exact same feeling I had. I was watching it, and that scene, I'm like, this is scary. Not scary, like, but this is creepy.
It's creepy.
It's just got, she's evil. Like, it just comes off of her, and everything, just the way she talks. And, you know, as she, it's not just like, you know, I want you to get rid of her.
No.
I want you to take her into the woods, you know, kill her, and then I want you to.
That's the third scene. Yes.
Oh, okay. Sorry. Yeah. But we'll get to that. But it's very dark. Like, you know, I was just watching this the other day, and I'm like, oh my gosh.
No, like we're gonna get to it in a second, but it doesn't. I don't mind if we hop around. I mean, I'm just very crazy about. I literally wrote notes scene by scene.
So did I.
This is an animated film, a family film. That's the thing. I'll use the word family.
Yeah, okay. Family's better.
Where. Bring me her heart.
Well, even in the beginning when she was talking to the mirror, she was like, I must kill her. Like, if she's not, if she's prettier than me, I
would
kill her.
Would an animated film come out now that would make a direct reference to cut her heart out?
No.
I don't know if they would get away with that. Like, because parents are way too protective of their children.
Oh, yeah.
Way too protective. But anyway, that's a whole other issue. So we get the whole thing. The facial animation was something that I really paid attention to in this film. God, it's good. It's better than a lot of movies that come out now. I made a note of it last week. I feel that a lot of films now suffer from what I call the DreamWorks face.
Yes.
Which is just the ever-shifting eyebrow up in the air, and that's the most emotion that you get out of a lot of characters. Not all, but a lot. A film in particular that really, really avoids that beautifully is Big Hero 6.
Yes.
I don't know. It's just one of those that I really noticed that, I don't see that a lot.
They were actually just kind of just watching that before we came
here. Really?
They're watching Big Hero 6, yeah.
Cool, cool. I can't wait till we get to that one, but we got a long way to go until we get there. The next scene, we get Snow White's intro. The thing that struck me initially right off the bat with this, again, the facial animation. Mm-hmm. Actually, John Champion used a great word while describing this in his email to me. The look of the film is ethereal. It's very dreamlike.
There are
a couple of shots where they actually use diffusion on the lens to give it a cloudy look, which, for a more modern example of that, if you ever watch the original Superman film, 1978, directed by Richard Donner with Chris Reeve, that film has a haze over it on purpose. It's not that the lens was foggy or anything. That was a diffusion put on top of the lens to give it a fantasy-like feel, because it, you know, that's Superman. You know?
It was fantasy. Yeah.
So you see it in a couple of sequences in Snow White as well. Adriana's voice is so unique. I mean, that vibrato that she can do with her voice.
When she first started talking, I was like, I don't like that voice. Like, right, oh, really? At first, like, when she first, when you first hear it, like, right away, like, the first, my first thing was like, oh, I don't like that. But then I did. But it's just like, I guess the when she first started talking, I wasn't, it's been a while since I've watched it.
It's
so
also
I wasn't,
been parodied so many times.
Exactly,
there
yeah.
might be a section of your brain where that hears that sort of delivery and you're like, oh, that's corny.
Yeah, so at first, you know? Like, that's the feeling I did get. I was like, oh, like, but then... Right, you know, soon after that, it went away. But that was my initial reaction to hearing it.
Okay. And then we got our first song.
Yep.
I'm Wishing, which I love. I love the music in this.
The music in this.
My favorite
song
comes much later in the film, though. It's kind of weird. I sort of forgot it was in here. I don't know why.
You know, I forgot there were so many songs in this movie.
Yeah. Yeah, there is.
I didn't realize there were so many.
Yeah. They're not very long, but they're good.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, nothing's lengthy. Well, we'll get to that later. Our prince shows up, our absolutely, quite honestly, vapid, empty prince.
He's so pretty.
This is something that's interesting, because when I look at this film and I get to the end of the film, the character with the most development, it comes down to two people, and it's definitely not Snow White or the prince, but we'll get to that later. He shows up, does his thing, and we get a very Romeo and Juliet sequence.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
She runs upstairs, goes out onto the balcony.
Yeah.
So some huge Romeo and Juliet influence into that. And Melissa, you were saying that it reminded you very similar of... I mean, granted, we're going to talk about this when the movie comes up, but I have no issue talking about it now. You watched that sequence, and what did you think of?
Well, I immediately thought of Sleeping Beauty, because he even like says, like, oh, I didn't mean to startle you. And that's, I think, literally what Philip says to Aurora, like, I didn't mean to startle you. You know, it
I
was.
I think he actually may have. Yeah.
Yeah, that's why. As soon as he said that, I was like, wait, what? Also, because I don't really remember the prince and Snow White talking very much, that it kind of was like, wait, what? What did
if
you just
I
say?
If I remember correctly, too, the voice of the prince and the singing voice of the prince are two different chaps. Unfortunately, I don't have the full. That's really weird. He's not even here.
He is
gone. How funny is that? But I'm pretty sure it's two separate guys. One man was able to do the song, but another one actually did his speaking role.
Which he didn't have much of anyway. I think
no,
it was just that line. But yeah, just that whole like
yeah, they,
guy creeping
they
up on the girl.
They used that
though.
same technique later, you know, girl in rags kind of. Well, she's not really in rags in Sleeping Beauty, but...
Peasant clothes.
The same sort of deal happens. Then we get, Brian, what you were talking about, the Huntsman intro.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Yes. Don't raise your hand.
I'm sorry. I did pick up on something, and I was very proud that I picked up on it. Both the queen and the huntsman have green eyes.
I wrote that down, too.
Because they're evil.
Yeah, I wrote that down, too. The huntsman has green eyes, so does she, but he's able to, you know, stave off that. I wonder what happens to him, ultimately. They never really tell you.
I'm sure she kills him.
I assume she kills him.
I'm assuming so. That would be the
yeah,
you know, her appropriate response, you would think.
Especially when you discover what she has later in her little laboratory.
Oh, yeah.
Well, again, wow, there's some really dark stuff in this guy.
Definitely.
So we get our Huntsman intro, and we get the heart box, which is now one of the iconic pieces of, what's the word I would look for? Set dressing from Disney films. The Snow White heart box is something that you see replicated a lot in collectibles and whatnot.
They did have a really nice collectible of that. I think it was the Oswalski. I always mess that name up. But he did like a full wood carving of that box. That
yes,
was beautiful.
Yeah. Following our Huntsman intro, we go to sorry, I just got a text message pop up in the front of my iPad. I really got to turn that stuff off. It doesn't make a noise, but it still like shows up like, hey, someone's trying to tell me something. Actually, the message was about Disneyland purchasing land across the street.
Yes.
In Anaheim.
Yeah, I saw that.
But it's just supposed to be...
Parking, I'm assuming.
Yeah, it's parking and supposed to be office
like
buildings.
Office.
Oh, okay, office buildings.
To run elements from the park.
They're...
I know, people... Not people, websites.
No, yeah. They
websites
really
go out
crazy
with this clickbait headlines, and they're like, pure speculation, but here's some ideas that we think will happen.
Yeah.
And you know what? They might build something.
Oh, of
it's
course.
It's weird, though, but if it's across the street.
It's very weird, and they just did Cars Land and all that other stuff, and they have more than enough stuff to do in Florida. And I'm sure that's where most of their attention at the moment is.
You know what? I wouldn't be surprised if there's a Marvel Land popping up over in Disneyland, though. Because they can't do it in Florida.
Well, they can't do it in Florida. So eventually I think that will,
I think that's where they'll happen.
Maybe, unless they're just waiting to see what happens with Nintendo Land and if something bounces back from to them from
with Universal and whatnot. So going over to our fourth scene, we have where the Huntsman attempts to kill Snow White, but he can't bring himself to do it.
I love the. I just love. He's got the knife and just the look on his face. That's what I noticed.
Like pure murder.
Yeah, like pure murder. Like he really. I was like, oh, this guy's doing it.
And then he pulls a 180. He's like, I can't do it. Falls to the ground. And then we have the fleeing through the woods sequence, which really creepy and has a really great. What's the word I'm looking for? Influence. Which you can take from German impressionistic art, and in particular, the film Nosferatu.
Mm-hmm.
The use of shadows in Nosferatu are very similar to what you see in the use of the trees in Snow White. This also made me think of the ride.
Yes.
Snow White's Scary Adventures. Yes. This made me remember that ride. So I had a little bit of like, oh, yeah, I remember that. Yeah,
that's one of my. That scene is one of my favorite scenes. And it is. It's got that creepy vibe again. And the music in it was during that scene was very... was good.
It's loud. It's very overpowering. Mm-hmm. But so is everything.
So everything is supposed to be. So it, you know, it fits.
I wonder what people's original reaction was to this sort of start off, you know, mm-hmm. cut her heart out, this whole horror sequence running through the woods.
Yeah.
It's a pretty intense start.
It is.
But for a Disney film.
Much more intense than I remembered, well, yes.
Which was a term that didn't exist
that's true.
At the time.
Yes.
You know, no one had the term a Disney film. That's strange.
How must it have felt to sit down in the theater and watch this for the first time?
To watch an animated film for 90 minutes?
Yeah.
And try to feel like an adult doing it? Because that was the big worry was, oh, this is everyone's going to think this is for kids and no one's going to come out.
Well, maybe that's, you know, that's why they started off with, you know.
Yeah, he started off with something like, a little more.
Definitely more adult.
A little more tooth and claws in its areas. Well, now we take a turn from the horror. And we're introduced to a trope that would now find itself in numerous Disney films, even to current day. And that is the introduction of forest creatures becoming friends that help the princess.
Yes, there were a lot of them.
There were a lot of them. So, I totally lost where I was.
The forest creatures. We got introduction to the forest creatures.
Were over there. Would a scene like this fly with a current audience?
Well, I think that's kind of what Enchanted did with it.
But it was parodying it. I mean, those were rats and cockroaches.
Well, no, in the animated part of it, she had like the woodland creatures things, and it was kind of like the same idea. Like there were a lot of them, and they're helping the princess. But yeah, I know it was a parody, but I think it was still like that same idea of like, remember all the times that our old films did this? It's kind of corny, right?
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying.
So I don't think it would fly now.
If a film didn't do that with that tongue-in-cheek, do you think it would work?
No. That's why I think they did it tongue-in-cheek, because it was kind of like...
Then we get With a Smile and a Song. Is that the name of that track?
That I don't know.
That she sings during then? I think it's called With a Smile, with a Smile and a Song is the next song that basically pops up that she sings to them.
Yeah.
And this is where we get our very puffy cuteness. Yes. That we were talking about that we saw in the Goddess.
Yes. Little round birds, little round bunnies, squirrels.
Yeah. Everyone looks really well fed.
Yes.
Everyone in the forest is
that forest is
well
supplied.
Yeah.
I also did notice all of the animals, they had like a family. Like it was a mommy bunny and a pop, daddy bunny and babies and mommy
except
and...
turtle.
Turtle was the only one that was alone.
Turtle
was
the only one. Because that gag works as if it's only one of them.
Yeah.
The turtle was the best part.
Yeah.
Every time he came on the screen, I laughed.
I really loved the final shot of this sequence when Snow White is running from right to left on frame and you get the reflection of her in the water and she's running, again, somewhat akin to what you see in Sleeping Beauty.
When they're dancing.
Which is one that I like to skip ahead. That's my answer for that film for iconic shots.
Yeah.
But I thought it was really, really beautiful and I'm curious of how they did it back then. Because you know that they had a lot of techniques that most of them are lost.
Yeah, they're lost at time.
You know, they're just lost. No one knows how they did certain things. So I thought this was very interesting. Now we discover the dwarf's house.
It looks like a doll's house.
Yeah.
I thought that was a really interesting line.
Why?
I don't know. I was like,
Tall dolls.
Why is it a doll's house? Like,
because it was small.
Is it a cottage?
Yeah, it looked like a cottage.
Yeah.
And how do you know it was so small? You were from far away.
Well, she wasn't. You would still know something was small. Like if you saw a kid from far away, you wouldn't think that they were not small, right? Like if you saw Kyle and you were 5 feet from him or 100 feet from him, he'd still look like a he'd still be small, right?
Yeah, but that's because like it's a child. Like this was a house. Like I don't know.
But it was a
like,
mini house.
But she didn't have like trouble fitting into it.
It was
so
like
it didn't
the TARDIS.
Seem like
it was
be...
like the TARDIS. It was larger on the inside. You should appreciate that.
Maybe.
You know what I'm gonna do? I'm gonna build you that house.
Okay.
And then you tell me if it's small. We get here one of the classic songs, "Whistle While You Work."
Yep.
Because they were filthy men.
Yes, they were filthy men. I also liked how when we were watching it, Melissa's like, that's no way to clean plates.
the deer?
I think that's a fantastic way.
Yeah, but the thing is, she said it right the second before Snow White tells him, like,
them.
Yeah, like, yeah. No, not that way. A lot of great little gags in this.
There's a lot of, what's the word? Not sight gags, but...
Yeah,
right?
Like, yeah, sight gags.
It's, you know, some slapstick type stuff. It was kind of like a lot of the shorter cartoons. It was like something you would see. That was just like a short cartoon sequence you would see maybe as a silly symphony.
Like right, that like, scene could be its own.
That scene could have just been a silly symphony, the cleaning in the house with all the animals and stuff like that.
Yeah. What I thought was really kind of interesting was you saw two chipmunks trying to hide dust underneath the rug and whatnot and then trying to put it into the mouse hole. And you would not be introduced to Chip and Dale for another 7 years. I wonder if this is like the grassroots
like
of where they started.
Yeah, I remember when I was watching it, I said to Michelle, I was like, that looks like Chip and Dale.
Yeah. Like, so I wonder if this was where it kind of started off. Something else that I picked up on, Snow White picks up a pair of red overalls. Couldn't help but think of the eventual Mickey overalls.
Oh, yeah.
Mm. I mean, they're pretty much the same thing. It's a big stretch.
Oh, yeah.
But it's just that my brain currently, I saw that in a Disney film, and I'm like, oh, those are Mickey's overalls.
Yeah.
So
it's hard to go from what you've seen and what you know to put it back into
And then put it all back into there. After our scene with that, we finally meet the dwarves, and we hear hi-ho.
Yeah. Classic.
I would say there's another shot in here that would be a candidate for the iconic shot, and that is the dwarves walking over the log bridge.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Over to the thing.
I thought you were going to say Dopey with the diamonds in his eyes.
That's another one. I would say that would definitely be a contestant for that.
Yeah.
That was also something that was used again in Enchanted. Looking far, far ahead. Way far ahead. So some really great moments there. We now have the dwarves coming home where we learn all their names. All the dwarves have, you know, a flaw. You know, the Doc is a leader, but he's a stumbler.
Yeah.
It's really kind of funny. Dopey can make... This I found interesting. I forgot that Dopey made any sound.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, but I forgot Dopey that too. Screamed. I thought he didn't make any.
He actually screams over there.
He just doesn't talk. He ever
That's
tried.
One of my favorite lines. He's never tried. He's just like...
I forgot all about that interaction.
Yeah, I did too.
I totally forgot about Doc having a stutter.
Yeah.
I was watching and I was like...
Yeah.
The first time he spoke and I was just like...
He almost has like a dyslexia while speaking. He'll switch the first letter of a word with another word.
Or sometimes he'll just switch the words in total.
He says crooked ween.
He's kind of like the... You know? He's kind of like the Sheriff of Rottingham from... from Nottingham, from
King
Legal
Forest Pig killed in it as is. I did find it interesting the dwarves knew who they were when they eventually meet Snow White, because I assumed they talked to nobody. That's just a small, stupid little detail.
Oh, what,
that
they knew she was the princess?
Yeah, they actually knew she was a princess, because I assumed that she just, the queen hid her.
Yeah.
And no one actually knew who she was, but this tells
kind of like
you
Rapunzel
that
type thing.
Exactly. But evidently that was not the thing.
Yeah.
I was also amazed that she left the stove cooking while being asleep in a wooden house.
Yeah, that was not very responsible not
safe.
Of her.
Not safe
well,
at all.
Well, she wasn't planning on sleeping. She just kind of was, like, really tired, and then
the
creatures tucked her in.
Yeah, then she moved all the beds together.
Yeah, she moved the beds together waiting for us.
No, they were there together.
But she moved them a little closer together. They were
right.
Maybe, I don't know.
We have to establish Snow White's not bright.
No.
She's
not bright.
Not at all.
She is actually asked to not do one thing in this entire film,
she immediately does it specifically.
Yes. Not hours later, days later, moments.
Yeah.
Mere moments later. So I thought that was pretty interesting. But something I did forget about the character of Snow White is the sass factor that she just shovels shade at Grumpy.
She does.
I mean, she's flat out sarcastic towards this character, and I loved it. I thought it was really good. But I just don't remember this movie.
No,
this was
I was sitting there at work and I'm watching this. And I'm like, man, this is I'm enjoying this.
Yeah, I actually really enjoyed.
And I was like,
you
know what? I didn't appreciate it as much. I've watched it since then, but usually it was other kids around or other people, so you can't
really watch
the movie as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But, yeah.
I think actually taking notes helped, because it made me more attentive to certain details.
Well, no,
and
we were going to talk about it, too. Same thing. I was, like, really, like, focused, like, trying to pay attention to things.
And you find the little things, these little throwaway jokes and gags that they always throw in there. The washing song I always enjoyed.
I just love how, like, Grumpy is an old man. He's like, women, I don't need to be clean. Like, the whole life.
He's the man. He's the Women Haters Man Club.
Yeah.
You know, like, he would have that sign above him.
And funny enough, he was my favorite dwarf when I was little. They re-released this film in 1987, and I was a big fan of it. They would play it in the local movie theater in Smithtown, which was a one-screen theater, and my friend and I would go with my dad all the time because dad didn't know what else to do with the girls, and he would take us to the theater, and I remember loving this movie, and I loved Grumpy, so much so that I made my grandma name her cat Grumpy.
Well, I mean, would you say that the Grumpy is the most represented dwarf on merchandise?
Yes, definitely.
And then second to Dopey.
Dopey,
right?
And Doc. That would be my top three.
But Grumpy's got to be
number one. Grumpy is number one I can think of. I forgot that they talked as much as they did.
Yeah.
I, for some reason, thinking back on it, I'm like, oh, no, they don't talk that much, I don't think. Like, the dwarves, I didn't remember that, but they talk a lot.
A couple songs, the whole bit.
Yeah, yeah.
So going back now, you know, we go back to the queen. She speaks to the mirror again. She's told it's a pig's heart.
Mm-hmm.
Again, dark. Pretty dark.
So that means that you had to go and kill a pig and cut its heart out, yeah.
But then my favorite dark moment of this film occurs, where we go into her laboratory, and she walks by a skeleton who's reaching their hand
out
for water.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
So she starved a man to death.
And then just left him there.
And then just left him. I love the clean bone look. I'm always a fan of that.
Yeah.
And then we also get maybe possibly another candidate for the iconic shot, and that is the creation of the poison apple.
Yes.
With the skull and bones, you know, showing up over on top of the apple.
Or even I always think of that scene where she's holding the cup up to the window to get the thunder and lightning and just, like, having, like, the cup bubble and stuff.
Yeah. No, that's
like,
also
with her reflection in it.
Yeah, this film has a lot of great moments of cinematography.
Yeah,
definitely.
It's really filled with some phenomenal moments.
Also, a bird as her kind of pet.
Yep.
Very similar to Sleeping Beauty. However, this
bird... But a very cowardly bird.
Yeah, this
scared
bird was
to
not
death.
The same. Yeah.
Scared to death of the evil queen.
Was not
pretty
her
much
sidekick.
Is terrified all the time.
Yeah.
So, not exactly the tit-for-tat relationship that Maleficent has with hers.
No, definitely not.
Returning back to the dwarves' cottage, we get the song that I love the most. This is my favorite. This is my favorite sequence, where we get the dwarves and Snow White dancing.
Yes.
We get the dwarves yodeling song, and that segues into Someday My Prince Will Come, which this is my favorite piece of the film.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you had to pick out a sequence of the film, this is it. I feel that this hits all the right notes. It gets you to enjoy all the characters. It brings, you know, your heroes and everything right on the same page. And I'm going to say this just because of something that happens later. She then prays before going to sleep.
I did note that, too.
Okay, she does pray. And remember that because of what happens at the conclusion.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, yes.
Okay, well, you know what I'm talking about.
Which I also did think, you know, like, back then for that time, that was probably an appropriate thing to put in the film. But now if you did that, if you had... And, like, initially it wasn't like, oh, okay, maybe she was just doing, like, a praying to the night star or something, kind of like how Tiana does. But no, she's on her knees, handcuffed, and she says amen.
Yeah.
So I did think, I was like, okay, well, you can't take that any other way. It's definite prayer. And I did think that was interesting because I don't think that would happen nowadays at all.
Yeah, it was very specific kind of prayer movement on that one.
Yeah.
Actually, slight correction. The apple-created skull face, that happens in the scene following this. Where we're back in the witch's lab.
Yeah, because you kind of cut back and forth.
Yeah, you cut back and forth now, and so I forgot about that. This is where we also get our hint into how everything's going to work out in the end with the love's first kiss. And if this isn't used in later films, then it's used in later films multiple times.
Yes.
Well, in Sleeping Beauty, it was true love's kiss. So I did think that was an interesting little twist.
A slight little tweak on it. And actually, you know what? I'm sorry. This is where you see the tortured man starving.
Yeah, because she walked out as the old crone.
And this is where she... This is another thing, like, I totally forgot. She doesn't kill Snow White. She puts her to sleep in the hopes that then the dwarves will bury her alive.
Yeah, all dependent on the dwarves doing that.
I mean...
If that's not twisted, I don't
damn,
know what it is.
That's like, messed up. Wow. So, all right, so now we go back to the cottage. Dwarves explicitly say, don't talk to anyone.
don't let anyone in.
Repeatedly. Grumpy actually shows a lot of character development here.
He wants a kiss.
Yeah, he kind of does. He, like, sets him up for a kiss. But then he really says, like, be careful.
Yeah.
Queen arrives at the cottage. Animals warn her that something is wrong. She shushes them away and lets her in the house.
It's just a sweet old creepy lets looking woman.
Yeah, because she looks like so, you know.
And I love the vultures.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
The vultures who are following because they know that a body is going to wind up being available at one point or another. Another interesting little piece I thought was when the dwarves are warned. Oh, I'm sorry. Let me just go back one second. This is where, if you want to, pay very close attention to the hand animation on the Evil Queen. When she is trying to get Snow White to eat this apple. Mm-hmm. Very, I mean, just incredible work. Incredibly creepy work that looks menacing and realistic and everything. It's really, really great. When the dwarves are finally figure out, like, we got to go back to the cottage, it's Grumpy that's the leader, not Doc.
Yeah.
He's the one who kind of tells everyone, like, hey, we got to go back.
Yeah, he jumps on the deer and is like, let's go.
Yeah, he jumps on a deer, which I loved. Because I was like, well, ain't got a horse.
Yep.
I guess you're going to do that. And then we get our chase scene where they're chasing down the queen. They go and they don't know yet that Snow White is on the floor.
Yeah, no.
You know, they just see her and they go chasing after her. And as she's trying to drop a rock on them, lightning from the sky.
Yep.
Shatters the rocks below what she, the ledge below she's standing on. Is she killed by God?
It's definitely other forces. Zeus?
I mean, this is what? This is minutes, maybe 10 minutes or so after we see
her pray.
Her praying, you know, for safety and blah, 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 and this. And then lightning from the sky shatters the rocks below her and kills the queen.
Which I also did think it was interesting.
And
that...
I'm not religious, by the way.
No, I'm not either, but you would think if you're going to do that, why would you let the queen get there, give her the apple, you know what I mean? Do all that
stuff.
Well,
it was all planned.
If you read the Bible, God is just a prankster.
Well, he works mysterious ways. Yeah. Yes, that is true. You're
just
right.
Ask Job. I'm sure he's a big fan. You know, that was a guy who just got tortured in order for someone to say, see? Told you you'd stick with me. Like, wow. Really took that too far, didn't we? I mean, wow. Okay.
I did think it's interesting, like, where the creatures warned the dwarves, and the dwarves were like, we gotta get back. Like, all of a sudden, it just started, like, downpouring. Like, there was no, like, precursor.
But that's great, though.
No, I know, but I
also
just thought it was...
because you can say that really also occurs once the queen completes her mission.
Yeah, when she's running away.
So,
yeah.
Like, ultimate evil is, you know, the murder of a young girl is committed, and the sky opens up. And ultimately, that leads to her getting struck-ish by lightning. We now transfer over that whole sequence to the vigil for Snow White. This is very specific, where you can see a lot of diffusion at the opening of the shot. to give that dreamlike element as you look upon, you know.
And again,
body.
Even before this, they had the kind of, not interlude, but almost where you saw, you know, explained what has happened. The dwarves, you know, built her a glass coffin because they couldn't stand to bury her. So the queen's plan's gone awry already.
Yeah.
And you also see, while the words are up there, you see the passage of time, the seasons change, you know, that you show the tree branches and it's, you know, the leaves, and then it's snowing, and then the spring leaves come in.
And
so it's been a time.
The prince is just curious.
He's like, oh.
He's pretty much just curious about the chick who's sleeping, the maiden who's asleep. So that's why he shows up.
Yeah.
He's kind of lame.
Yeah, he's really lame.
He's kind of lame. He does nothing.
That's why it's not true love's kiss here. It's just love's first kiss, because, you know.
That's just semantics, honey.
Yeah, and that's the whole, like, part of this. You know, it's just a first kiss as opposed to true love.
But isn't this love's first kiss?
Yeah, but it's not true love.
You still have to... Don't worry about it. You know, I'm not going to argue.
Yeah,
we're
going to get into it.
No, okay. This part of the film was... It aggravated me. Like,
really?
It really did.
Why?
When he comes and he kisses her and she wakes up and everybody's like, yay! And then she gets on a horse and, bye, everybody! It's like, the dwarves were there for like a year.
No, I was like, thinking bye. That too. She kind of up and leaves, but I assume that there's a scene in between where it's like, hey, that was crazy, huh?
Yeah.
Remember when, like, you died? And, like, they all sat and had, like, dinner.
Yeah.
And it was like, hey, pretty nuts, huh?
Yeah, but I mean, like, you know, we built you this...
Didn't
this,
we tell this... you not to let anyone in?
Yeah, but at the same time, it's just like, all right, well, I'm going to go live happily ever after with the prince. I'll never see you again. Bye. Like,
No, I mentally had to say, all right, there's an interlude in between there where they actually have their moments together.
Yeah. It's just like the way it was shot was kind of weird because it was like, also, you know, she wakes up and then she's getting on a horse.
Yeah. Also, though,
you would think she'd have to do some stretching.
Yeah. She did get to the cottage by running through the woods a little bit. So she's, what, maybe a mile
away
from the castle? So she can just visit.
Yeah.
Well, that was her castle, not his castle. We don't know where his castle is. Different kingdom.
And we don't know how long she was running through the woods, though. There was, you know, trees coming alive.
Yeah, and she, like, fell down a hole.
Yeah.
I would also say the glass coffin shot would also be a candidate for the most iconic shot of this film.
That and then him kissing her also.
Yeah. And then I was reminded again of Snow White's Scary Adventures on the final shot of the film, where it's them walking and you see the kingdom in the...
Oh, yeah.
Which is obviously where they're going to live, since that's the shot.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that's what I'm thinking of.
What are you thinking
of? The ride. Maybe that's what I thought of when I said I thought Dopey spoke at the end. I thought he said, goodbye, Snow White. I thought... that was in the movie. Maybe that was in the ride?
I don't remember that at all.
I don't remember it either.
And you looked it up online, and you had a couple other people
I had a couple other people who put, like, posts up, like, doesn't Dopey say goodbye? And, like, does, like, a little stutter. He does try to, like, talk and say goodbye, because that's, like, when he's saying goodbye to this girl who's, like...
I never remember that.
I totally did, and when we watched it and it was missing, I was like, where did it go?
Strange little note also, when Snow White is saying goodbye to the seven dwarves, she kisses six of them. She doesn't kiss Sleepy on the head.
I did find that in my Google results.
Why?
I don't know. I think it was just an oversight by the animation.
Yeah, I'm sure. But yeah.
Like, they were, like, the film is done, and someone eventually noticed, they're like, did we just, is that six? And Walt walked in, he's like, guys, we're done here.
Yeah.
We're
done. I mortgaged the house in the farm. Like, we're done.
This thing premieres in 3 hours.
Yeah. Like, you know, going back to that with the $250,000 that it was projected.
What was
the cost?
Thinking? Like, why was like, thinking?
How would you feel if you were the guy who had to come on and be like, hey, Walt, so, you know.
Well, actually,
it might have been off by like.
We went about 3 weeks. And
funny
we
enough, that would have been Walt saying that to Roy.
Right.
Yeah,
actually,
that's right. That's true.
It would be Walt going up to Roy and being like, hey, remember that number I gave you? What if we say went 600% over that number? Roughly.
Roughly.
Are we still good? Yeah? All right. I'll come back later. Let you think about that for a moment.
This is why Roy was always stressed.
Yeah, yeah. One could not pull it off without the other.
Nope.
So, and that, you know, and then we have our happily ever after. Wow, I really said that like four times quicker than I meant to. Our happily ever after ending.
No, I thought you were actually, I'm sorry to totally cut you off, but I thought you were going to say how
the... I do it all the time. I just did it now.
The sky, the castle in the sky was like gold and glowing and it was kind of in the clouds, so it was kind of like they were going to heaven, so maybe she died. I don't know.
What? No. Wow.
No? Okay.
No. Wow, you're seeing another movie.
Mind blown.
Well, because you were saying like how she prayed and that was the ending, so I was like, oh, well, maybe, yeah. Like,
sweetie, this isn't M. Night Shyamalan, okay?
Well, no, I didn't think you thought that she died.
She was just behind a wall.
The castle in the sky thing is what I thought you were talking about.
It was just
about.
Off in the distance.
Well, it was golden floating in the clouds, I don't know.
Well, maybe the lightning bolt was Zeus and she was going up to
Olympus.
Yeah. That's how we get to Hercules.
It's all connected.
It's a circle of Disney circle life.
6 years later.
She leaves the prince. He gets very angry. He gets blue, a flame on his head.
There you go. Hades. We have Hercules.
Everything's connected, folks. Everything's connected. Okay. So,
Where are we going?
There's that.
Sorry.
Okay. Let's go into the three final shots. Three final questions of the film. Number one, we'll start with Melissa, God help us all.
Oh, God.
Does this film hold up?
See, I don't want to go first. This is too hard to...
I'll go first.
Do you want to...
Thank you.
For the most part, yes. I definitely think it holds up. There are some things that I think maybe now some people might find, like we said before, corny or...
Passé.
Old-fashioned, something like that. But I really did not remember the tone being so dark. And, you know, the animation is beautiful. I definitely think it holds up. The songs are still great. The songs still hold up. I definitely think it's timeless. It's one of those timeless movies that will hold up forever.
Scott, same question.
Yes, I do think it holds up. There's one thing that they do in this movie that I notice from the beginning that I wish they did more of now, and that's they use the dramatic music to set emotions. You know, when there's, you know, when the huntsman's going to, you know, kill her, you know, they used only music.
You don't feel that happens anymore. Not as much.
Not as much. And, like, the whole scene through the woods, it's the same type of thing. You know, you get the feeling of being lost and being scared with just the music.
I'm curious as we get further along in this, if when you sit and only like really focus in on these films, I think that you're going to find that happens a lot more than you may know now.
Yeah.
I think that's something you don't really notice sometimes unless you're really looking, looking at the movie.
Yeah. I feel like nowadays they use more images with the music combined, but
I could play for you right now the piano piece from Up, and you'll know exactly what's going on. Right.
I do agree with you with
so
Up.
So I think it does happen.
But I do see Scott's point because, especially the examples you used, they were all like dramatic or scary, like that type of darker emotion, where I think that is kind of played down because now you do have the quote-unquote Disney movie where it's more of a happy type of not-so-scary feel. So... you know, whereas this was the first animated film more for families, adult, you were going to see it in a theater. So maybe the emphasis on the drama and the scariness, like that was okay. Now,
we'll figure it out.
Well, this is one of those great things about doing this.
That's going to be one of the questions that we find out as we do this.
Yeah, we'll pay attention.
Does film still do animated films? Let me use that because it definitely happens.
It definitely happens in live action films.
Does it happen in animated films as much where the music is implemented? I believe it does, but I'm also thinking specifically of Michael Giacchino soundtracks where he nails everything.
Yeah.
And that's also, I mean, that's largely Pixar. We'll look into the other stuff. So, Melissa, the question to you, are you okay to answer it now?
I am.
Does this film hold up? Assuming that it doesn't end with the clouds and the other insanity that you spoke earlier
on a cloud.
Good Lord.
I do think it's like what Brian said. It's a classic. It's it does hold up, I do believe, also because you have, like, the family element to it. So you do have the drama, the happy, fun, goofy things, along with the scary, you know, suspenseful aspects to it. So, like, you know, when we sat down and watched it, it wasn't like, we're going to watch a kid's movie, you know. It was we're going to watch a movie. So I do think it's timeless, and it's a classic like that. I do want to say, though, I don't think it's timeless because there are definite parts of this that I don't think you can get away with now. You know, in particular, in the beginning of the movie, I noted, like, the queen calls the magic mirror her slave in the mirror. Couldn't use that now, I don't think. I don't think it would come off as well. Same thing with the prayer. So just, like, little things like that, I think, do date it. But, I mean, overall, it's pretty, you know.
Okay. I think it absolutely holds up, which I don't know if I was going to say that before I sat down and watched it again.
I had the same feeling. It definitely required me to sit down and watch it again. It required
for me to sit down and just kind of break down all the little elements of the film. I do think it is a timeless animated film, but I do understand what you're saying. There are certain... I mean, again, Snow White's not really a greatly developed character. The prince is an empty box.
None of them are really developed
characters are the Evil Queen.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You don't get a flip side of her, but she doesn't need one. And Grumpy. Mm-hmm. Grumpy is the best developed. He actually has a character arc.
Yeah, yes. He does. He's the only one with a real character arc.
He's the only one with a character arc.
The queen is what she is from the start.
Yeah. Which is great.
You know what I mean? Which is fine. Yeah, which is actually what you want.
Snow White is who she is from the very beginning of the film.
Everyone is.
But Grumpy is the one who actually has growth as a character, which was surprising because I didn't remember that at all.
No, I did not.
That's why I loved him.
Aww.
I honestly didn't remember this film being as funny as it was. Like, I laughed.
Yeah.
Like, it was a modern day movie. Yeah. Like, they had the slapstick stuff and they had you know, every time that Snow White kissed Grumpy, he ran into something or which was just hysterical. Yeah.
And I kind of was like, because it's been really a long time since I've sat down and watched this. And I'm like, I'm hoping this is going to feel like a chore to get through it. Because even though I knew it wasn't that long.
That's Chicken Little. That's later.
There's one before that. I don't know if I can get through the one.
Yes, you have to.
I will. I will do it for everybody, but I don't know if I can.
We could do a group viewing if it'll help.
Yeah, it will. And so I thought, you know, I was like, I'm hoping I can get through this and I'm not going to be like bored. I was into it.
Yeah, I was into it.
Definitely.
Let's go on to our next question. What is the quote-unquote the heart of the film, which is, I'm not using that as a pun for this one.
Huh.
Is this a movie with a moral lesson, or is it a film that is more aimed to get an emotional response out of you? For me personally, I don't think there's a moral, or don't let strangers in the house, that would be the only moral. I do think that this is supposed to get an emotion out of you of joy, mm-hmm. of scared, wonder, all that kind of stuff, and it nails it.
Yeah.
It nails it.
I think like an emotional roller coaster, and it's exactly that. You know, you have the beginning scene where everything is, you know, happy, and then she almost gets killed, and she meets the dwarves, it's happy again. You know, it's up and down, but it's good.
It's got a good flow to
it. It's paced very well. You know, it really is.
You know, there are some animated films that at an hour and a half can feel a bit taxing.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
But this doesn't.
You know, that's kind of what I thought. That's the great way to put it. I thought it was going to be taxing.
Okay.
Like, I was going to be like, it was going to be a sludge to get through because it was an hour and a half. Like, it wasn't, you know, just a little, like Dumbo, you know, just a little over an hour.
Don't get a drink, it's halfway over.
Yeah, you're already done.
Like, going back to, did you watch it with Kyle or you watched it by
yourself? No, I watched it on YouTube. I watched it with Connor.
And I feel like a lot of the animated films.
Let everyone know, how old is Connor?
He's 4.
Okay.
I feel like a lot of the animated films, they bring the child's interest with the animation itself, and while the other, you know, the dialogue and the actual feel of the movie is more geared towards adults.
Okay.
Because, I mean, he wasn't scared, and he didn't really know, he didn't know what was going on, but the whole scene where, you know, you gotta kill her and bring me my heart, he wasn't like, oh my God, that's terrible.
What's going on?
You know, he was just
you should probably see a doctor about that.
Because that wasn't, it wasn't really visual.
Right.
Like, when we get to Sleeping Beauty, like, when Maleficent goes into the dragon, you know, like, something like that, that's more, like, visual, like, a visual scare.
Yeah.
The stuff with Sleeping Beauty, with Snow White is more, I mean, when she's the witch, she's creepy looking as the witch.
Yeah, when
sure.
she transforms into the witch, I think there's a really good turn to the camera.
But, like, just, yeah. you know, the beginning part of what makes her scary and creepy is the delivery and just the...
The cackling, the...
You know,
And so we all... Does anyone think that this is more a moral film than an emotion film?
No. Well, I don't know, because she's thinking Melissa? That they're riding a cloud out at the end. You sure, Melissa?
Well, maybe. You should just pray a lot. I don't know. Lightning will strike near your enemies.
So now let's go to the final question that I have for us, and that is, what, to your opinion, is the iconic shot of the film when you think of Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs? What frame of animation within the film is what you think of first? Who wants to go first so I don't scare anybody? We'll go with Brian around again. Yeah.
My, the scene that always pops into my head is one you brought up earlier, is one of the iconic scenes, is the dwarves going across the bridge, the log bridge. That's just when I think of Snow White, that's the scene that pops into my head. Okay. Singing hi-ho and walking across the bridge.
Scott?
I have the same one.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I mean, when I heard that they were doing the Seven Dwarfs minecart ride in Disney, I was like, that's, you know, they're coming from the mine. I assumed it would be like a wooden, you know what I mean? Like, it was just, that's the feel you get. I always thought Snow White, like, I knew who she was, but the dwarfs were more of what I thought about when I heard the movie.
To me, she's not the most interesting. You know, the dwarves are what I found the most interesting, and the queen.
And that's how Disney intended
it.
That's how Walt intended it.
You know, like, she's might be the headliner, but she's not, you know,
it's the supporting cast that makes the connection.
It's the supporting cast that you connect with.
They brought all the emotions from, I mean, there are seven of
literally.
Them. But
basically, it was Inside Out in the beginning.
Yeah.
Melissa, what would your iconic shot of the film be?
I think mine would be when the prince is kissing her when she's asleep.
Okay.
Just because, like, that... And it's the faraway shot when he's, like, leaning over her. Okay. It's not the up-close
not
one.
Not the close-up one.
Yeah.
The medium shot, we could say it like that.
I think you still get some dwarves in that one. I don't remember. But, yeah, just the whole, like, with the coffin, with the flowers, and, you know, you just have the whole thing.
Very nice. Okay. Mine would be... her twirling, dancing with Dopey during the yodeling scene while he's on Sneezy's shoulders.
Yeah.
That would be mine. And it's perfectly recreated in the minecart ride.
Yeah. I can't wait to go on that ride. Now I really want to go on that ride really
it's
bad.
So great. That would be mine. Like, when I think of that film, I think of that moment. And that would be my answer to that. If you guys have any opinions, let us know. Send it over to lastgenpodcast.com. lastgenpodcast@gmail.com. Tweet us, lastgenpodcast. Hit us up with a picture of it if you can actually go and get a picture of the scene that you like and post it up on the website over the Facebook page, actually, would probably be best.
Yeah.
Over at the Disney Magic Hour. If you're not already a member, go over there, you know, click join. We'll let you in the doors. We do have the thing for the click to join, just so we make sure it's not, you know, you're not getting sold terrible sunglasses or some garbage like that.
Yeah.
So I hope you guys enjoyed this. This was, again, this is our first one. I'm not sure. Are we going to do this for next week? Or we'll do news next week.
We'll see what comes out.
Well, yeah. I was going to say, or we can see if it's a light news week.
Yeah, yeah. We'll kind of play it by ear. It depends on what. Because I know that nothing is going to happen until
D23. Yeah, we might be. You know what? Maybe we should do this up until D23.
Okay, yeah, because I know that once that happens, there's going to be a lot of information
to
talk about.
Just so everyone knows, our schedule on that's going to be a little different because we're going to have a guest.
Yeah.
But it's not going to be the week of D23 because that person's not going to be returning home until like the middle of the week where they have to run their own show.
Yeah.
We're going to have them on the following week.
Okay.
But we are going to be talking about D23, and we're also going to delve into a Star Wars cruise.
Cool.
In a little more detail with that particular cat. So that's really, it should be a lot of fun. I'm really looking forward to that.
Oh, yeah. I'm looking forward to that a lot.
All right, guys. Right now, you are listening to Pogo. This song is called Wishery. It's all made up of our film that we first went over today with Snow White and Seven Dwarves. So, hope you guys enjoyed it. We will come back maybe next week and do the next one. Which will be next? Dumbo? 1940s Dumbo?
Yeah, I think so.
Or was 40 was Fantasia. I think 41 was Dumbo. So we'll look into which one that is, and I'll let you guys know on the site. So if you want to find out more about Pogo, head over to youtube.com/Pogo. You can find his music over on soundcloud.com/PogoMix, and his home website is pogomix.net. We are lastgenpodcast.com. Find us on Twitter at lastgenpodcast, on Facebook under the same name, and under, of course, Disney Magic Hour. You can also head over to iTunes and hit that subscribe button. Please give us a 5-star review and share the show with your friends. It helps us immensely. The audience on this show seems to be growing, so that's really cool. I don't know how it's getting out there, but we appreciate it all. Brian, what do you got?
This next movie was actually Pinocchio.
Yes,
was February 7th, 1940.
And then Fantasia, oh, okay.
Was in November.
Okay, great.
And then Dumbo was 4.
Then Dumbo was out. Oh, wow. Okay, so I totally missed Pinocchio.
Yeah.
Wow, that's terrible. So,
you know what? Because they're all... The thing is, I'm looking at this, they're all really tight together.
Yeah.
They're with the, you know, the top five are Snow White, Pinocchio, Fantasia, Dumbo, Bambi.
Oof.
And Pinocchio through Bambi is 4 movies in 2 years.
Yeah, well, this, well, you know, off the profits of Seven Dwarves, he created the animation studio, so he got that place cranking right away. All right, well, let's say our goodbyes. How's that sound?
Sounds good.
Say goodnight, Melissa.
Goodnight, Melissa.
Say goodnight, Scott.
Goodnight, Scott.
Say goodnight, Brian.
Goodnight, Brian.
Goodnight, Pete. Say goodnight, Pogo.